So what are we talking about?
Does it matter? We should probably just go clap our hands and try to and say we're starting.
I do want to know, what is one thing each of you learned from 2019? A takeaway.
Do we need to tell you now or can it be a surprise?
No, you have to tell me now.
Oh.
So for me, it was slowing down and the value of slowing down.
No, fair. I should have talked to you quicker because that's sort of mine too. Mine would be, and it goes along with my mantra of this year, which is do less with more intention and more purpose. Because as you know, Gina, I always spread myself way too thin and that doesn't get me anywhere. No. Well, no. I finally realized I used to be like all proud of it that I can handle it all because I can. I've handled more than I handled last year, but it
just
doesn't.
Because you can doesn't mean you
right,
should.
Right, exactly. And I always take on that extra, like when I took on doing the show that I thought it was going to get me a little of ahead and I'd make a little extra money. Well, the truth is, then I always find it doesn't get me ahead. And it only gets me exhausted and it doesn't enhance the direction of business that I was trying to go in by doing something extra, thinking I can pick up extra cash and that I'd have some fun with it. Like it's not worth it.
And then you're not as perky when you're exhausted.
True. I'm probably decently perky right now because I'm not exhausted.
Yay.
You know, Rachel, that one of the things that I work with CEOs a lot on is doing less.
Well, you know what's crazy is day one, I want to say it might have been New Year's Day, or maybe it was somewhere right around New Year's that I was looking back through my last year's day planner, just looking at everything that had gone down in the previous year. And I came to that phrase of do less with more intention, do less with more purpose. Mm-hmm. And I just said, okay, I'm just not, yeah. I'm going to only, you know, do what I'm doing right now with full focus, which 100 coaches will tell you that. And I've never really, I've tried to buy into it, but I never have. So I decided just for that one day when I figured out that, okay, I'm not going to overdo it. And about $2.2 million worth of business fell in my lap that day without me trying. Now, mm-hmm. you know, that was all prospected business, but like potential business that could happen. But I was like, oh, I see.
Yeah. And when I go into a lot of companies, one of the challenges they have is they're trying to do, everything's a priority. So there is no priority and there's no focus. And so nothing can get completed to the point where it's really worthwhile. And it happens at the individual level and it happens at organizational level as well. It's so common.
And employees don't know how to deal with that. Like that's one thing I've been working on with some of our clients where the employees are so frustrated because they keep getting things dropped on them and their reaction is, you know, they keep giving me last minute things to do and I'm like, well, that's kind of life. But the problem is they don't know how to prioritize mm-hmm. because the leader hasn't told them what's the priority mm-hmm. and they don't know how to manage up and say, what's the priority?
Yep.
And everything becomes a priority and then and then the employee is just miserable and then productivity sucks and then morale goes down and there are some dysfunctions there. As Keith says, everybody should read that book. I listened to you yesterday. Listen to Keith talk.
Oh, you listened to the what podcast book? with our friend
Casey.
Oh, yeah. It's actually, I require everybody I work with to read this book. It's called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And it's written by a guy named Lencioni, and all of his books are excellent. And it's a real fast read because it's written this fable kind of mm-hmm. form. So it's a real quick read, but it's basic. And it's kind of geared toward organizations, but it's a relationship. It's the same.
Yeah.
Family, whatever. It's the same thing.
I actually started using that with the emotional intelligence training I'm doing. So that has become part of it. I'm trying to build trust.
Mm-hmm.
I love Lencioni. I forget which book. One of his books, he talks about improv. So, of course, that makes me happy. I forget which one it is. And the other thing I learned from him was I forget which book that's in. He said, repeat, repeat, repeat when it comes to communication. So just because you think saying it once should be enough, somebody might not have heard it. So you have to continuously repeat yourself in different forms until the message is heard.
Yeah. When you think you've over-communicated is when you're starting to reach the right communication level.
Yeah. But think about when I was a younger leader, I would get so frustrated. I'm like, do I really have to tell you this again? You should have heard it the first time.
Yeah.
But I grew up and now I just know I have
and
to say it.
You're so wise.
So I think the episode started as usual. So that's good. Going along those same lines of slowing down and doing less with more, that was kind of my big takeaway from last year as well with the client work that I'm doing. It's taking on less clients, but bigger projects. Mm-hmm. And that's really keeping me focused and engaged. And it's less exhausting mentally.
So I am seeing a pattern in us three. And I've been sitting here trying to think of who I was talking to over the weekend that said that they felt like they were similar to me. And I was thinking of you, Gina, because it's how you are as well, that we're idea factories and we will come up with 1,000 ideas and we just need a babysitter to say, you know, this one is not really that great of an idea, or, you know, because we will come up with stuff. And then I think we get sidetracked sometimes with trying to chase a certain idea. I definitely,
because we just love it.
I definitely get sidetracked with things that I think, like I said earlier, that I think are going to get me ahead, which they don't, because I just need to get to the singular focus. Now I've reached a point, I believe, that I've figured out how to use, because I always get sidetracked by performing because I love to do it. But now in my...
Can you explain performing for maybe someone who just is joining the podcast for the very first time ever?
I have been a ballet dancer since age 5, and that was my first career, is to be dance on stage, dance in films. I never took my clothes all the way off, if that's what you're wondering out there.
I mean, when you say I was performing, I just want to make sure everyone.
When you say you're performing, I'm a dancer.
Especially around this area, they're like, ooh, which club? So yes, performed. And I have, in our area where we live, performed with a particular theater show for about 20 years on and off. And every time they need somebody, then they call me. And I do love it. And this time when I went back and did it again, and I realized that it's really not the best showcase for what I can do for my level of talent that I have over 10,000 hours of. It's not the best use of my time, and it doesn't pay me that well. So as much as I love it, I have to move on from it. And now in what I'm trying to do in terms of rebranding myself, I do get to put myself in a better showcase of my talents, and it contributes to what I'm doing in business. So I guess I just kind of had to come to that. It had to evolve.
How hard was that? How hard was that for you to like let go of something that,
you know, it is actually a love to you? It actually wasn't that hard, because I came to that realization that there's been a bunch of situations where that particular corporation told me they didn't want me. However, when they had an emergency and someone got pregnant or somebody got injured or somebody quit and with 2 days notice, they suddenly needed me. And I was like, you know what? It just kind of dawned on me. Like, I think I'm best off where people want me rather than, oh, we just need you because we know that you can perform, and not actually being given the, and it's really ego driven as well. I'm aware of that they didn't tell me they want me, and they never, I was never actually good enough, but I was good enough when they didn't have somebody else. So it was actually an easy decision at that point. And, you know, I'm literally twice the age of the girls that I was dancing beside. So their problems are not my problems. So circling back to an earlier conversation that, you know, sometimes you just can't relate to people that aren't at your level of where you have worked towards in your life. Like mm-hmm. my problems are not their problems because I'm in such a different place than they are because I'm twice their age.
Yeah. And I think for me, what I've noticed on that is that I've had to, and Keith is a little bit older than us. So he can talk on this too, probably better. I think the older I get, the more patience I realize I need to have with those a little bit younger because they haven't walked in the same shoes as long or in the shoes at all. And I can't get, it's like having a big dog and a puppy, right? Puppy's like, woo, yay. And the big dog's like, shut the fuck up. But the big dog can't do that sometimes as a leader. So you just sort of have to just be patient through it and not get aggravated or feel the need to explain yourself.
Right. And there was a lot of situations where I'm like, listen, you guys, you've got to listen to me. I have been through this. Please just listen. But they have to learn it themselves because they'd be like, nod, yeah. nod, nod. And then when I'd hear them talking amongst themselves, I knew that what I was trying to convey was not getting across to them at all. And they were just going to have to learn on their way. And I'm sure I was the same when I was that age too.
Exactly.
For sure. Like, oh yeah. Or oh, yeah, sure, whatever.
I'm sure Keith feels that way about you and I sometimes.
Maybe one day they'll get it.
As he sits back right now and doesn't say a word and just lets us go. That's why he's such a great mentor. Keith, do you want to speak? He just wants us to keep going.
Let's keep going. Yeah. Experience is a great trainer.
True.
Ooh. That's a good quote.
Well, and really, in some of the situations that I was talking to these younger girls about, I have experience. And experience of others, it just isn't the same as your own personal experience. And I am seeing that so much now that, and the same thing with speaking to real estate agents now that I'm on the mortgage side, like they'll listen, but that doesn't actually mean that they're going to apply what they're hearing until they learn it themselves. And they have firsthand experience rather than secondhand through, like, don't do it this way. I screwed it all up. They still got to do it.
You know, what is so rewarding for me is when I'm like interviewing people, recruiting people, and occasionally, very rarely, occasionally run across someone who is younger, much less experienced, but they get that idea of the value of experience and they apply what you have. And they're really curious and will try it. And every now and then, and there's a handful of people I can think of, you find these people who are like, okay, I'm going to listen and I'm going to do it and see what happens. And it's amazing what those people can do. And it's one of those things, you know, you look back at your own life and think, yeah, people told me this and I didn't do it. And when you run across someone who does, it's fascinating.
Oh, it's invigorating.
Yes, it is.
Because they're like, they're the puppies who are like, no, give it to me. I want it. Tell me. Actually, Casey Hasten can sometimes be that way with me when I'm visiting her. Like, I stay at her place in exchange for coaching and vodka.
Wow. Let's talk about a cheap date.
Well, you know, hey, that brings us to, you know, kind of, we talked about this earlier about being coachable, right? So some people are coachable and they want it, and some people want to learn the hard way and they don't want to be told what to do. And I think Rachel hit this, some of that is ego. I'll learn
with
it my
your
way.
Your experience as being my coach, Gina, would you say that I was coachable or not coachable?
You know, you were coachable.
Oh, good. Because I was sitting here, you guys were saying, I'm not coachable. And I'm like, I'm really not sure. I think I try, but then I'm also a squirrel chaser. So I'll be like, yeah, I'm going to do that. Oh, wait.
Yeah, that was my only challenge with you, honestly, I mean, you were coachable, but not when you were chasing squirrels. And then I would like be the squirrel catcher, and I'd be like following behind you with a net, trying to like.
A lot of your coaching was for me to not follow those squirrels and come back into the fold.
Yes, I was literally running with a net, or what's that game where you're like the moles and you're
the
hitting
whack-a-mole.
Their. Yeah, the whack-a-mole. I was literally, every time one would come up, I would like hit it and be like, no, Rachel, you can't do that. Focus. But I'm the same way. That's why I have Keith to talk to. Keith, should I do this?
Why?
And he goes, why? That's the birth of this podcast, because he actually said yes. I thought for sure he was going to say no. I thought he was going to whack the mole. But he didn't.
So there's a saying that the
idea... He wanted to be the whacker. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it anyway. There's a saying. Go on. Well, whacker.
The idea of a lifetime comes around about once a week. And it's not really the idea. The idea has no value. It's only if you can turn the idea into results does it have value. And so, you know, it's being able to just like, oh, that's a great idea. Can I do it? No, it's not going to happen. Okay, I'll let it go.
Where'd you get that quote? Did you make that up?
Maybe.
It's hard.
I think I did, but I've used it for so long, I can't remember.
And it's hard to give it up. Like, I have a couple of big ideas that I threw a lot of money at, too, had to just take a step back from because I realized that maybe it wasn't the idea of a lifetime. That's a hard one. And I think people hold on to that because they have invested so much money in it. And I used to worry about that until I heard, I think it was an audiobook of some sort. I can't remember which one, where it talked about Jeff Bezos is the Amazon guy, right? So many millions and millions of dollars he lost when he first did Amazon, and it was books. And then when he tried to go into toys, and it was a total disaster, and lost millions. And of course, everything turned around again later, and boom, you know, everybody, I buy all the toys that I send to the kids in the family off of Amazon now. But when I heard that, it reminded me that sometimes you have to let what you think is a really great idea go, even if you have thrown money at it, sunk costs, and move on if it's just blocked and it's not going anywhere.
Because there's a bigger cost than the money investment.
Yeah.
It's the opportunity cost, the cost of your time.
Yep, hanging around.
Cost of your brain power.
Hanging around in the wrong place won't get you anywhere.
Mm. That's what my mama told me. But I still hung around in the wrong places.
Me too.
Hey, Warners, this is Gina Tremarco. And if you know Rachel and I, you know how much we love our beauty strategies, especially Dermavogue, where we both go to keep our faces looking younger and healthier. Every time someone says to me, something looks different about your face, I can't help but to tell them that the Dermavogue team, led by Dr. James Turk, has been offering the greater Myrtle Beach area the best in cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology since 2003. Dermavogue combines expert medical knowledge with cutting-edge technology, bringing their patients the most effective, flawless solutions to any skincare or cosmetic need. Some of the services to consider include Botox, skin peels, facials, biote, and much more. I personally love and highly recommend their Botox and lip injections for making my face look younger and healthier, and for biote for improving my energy, sleep, and weight control. At Dermavogue, they gauge you in the process of total body health to ensure your satisfaction with their comprehensive selection of the most up-to-date, non-invasive cosmetic dermatology and spa treatments. If you want to look and feel your best, Dermavogue can help you get there. Schedule your consultation today by calling 843-357-2444 or visit dermavogue.com and tell them that the women your mother warned you about sent you.
Keith, any thoughts, Keith?
Yeah, so we were talking about coachability. I am not coachable because I have a problem with authority figures.
Ooh. Tell us more about that.
So
sit on the couch.
I can have a mentor and peers influence, and I will listen. But if someone tells me what to do, that's exactly not going to happen.
Ooh, what's your sign? What's your sign, Keith?
I'm a Virgo. But I think there's a lot of people, especially high-level leaders who are similar. And I think it really makes coaching, the whole concept of coaching, you know, difficult. You and I and JJ were having a conversation about this a few days ago about the whole term of coaching. And, you know, I advise a lot of companies, and people ask me, do I coach? It's like, no, I don't coach. I advise, I mentor, but I don't coach.
Well, I think I was just thinking of the word coach and the image that initially will come to mind for a lot of people, which is the coach of some sort of sports team. So you have to have the coach, the leader, so that everybody knows what they're doing. And who does a coach go to? Well, he goes to his other peers. Like, he probably might consult with other coaches that are on his level, but he definitely wouldn't have another coach tell him how to run his team. Probably he would have them advise. So I guess it's a difference of where you fit in, because I've figured out about myself, I'm not meant to be the head honcho. I'm freaking great as second in command. And there was times in my life where I thought I needed to be head honcho in some things, but I don't do great at that. I do great at second. I'm a great sweeper. And I think some people are built to be the leader. Mm-hmm. And the ones that really hadn't figured that out and want to be the leader, but they're not good leaders, woo, watch out for those. But it's, I think some people are built for it and some people are not. And you just have to figure out what works for you and how to get advice, I guess, right? I'm sure, Keith, you have some people you go to when you have a problem that you would like advice on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's getting input as opposed to getting specific direction.
Right.
Well, that's a lot of what Vistage does.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of what Vistage does.
It's issue processing, and you put a issue out there, and they can't really give you advice. They can ask you some probing questions to help you get there.
Yep.
But I also find in those groups that everyone's still a problem solver and the chair has to reroute everyone's questions. You have to have like buzzers to be like, no, you can't say that.
I think
because we just go right into the
situation where you bring a bunch of humans together, there's going to be a few that they just jump on it and they think they know the answer and, oh, you should be doing this. Like, there's just, I've never been in a room full of people where there wasn't somebody who had things. They knew what you should do. It's like human nature, I think.
Yeah. It's, we gotta get back to humanizing business when it comes to, I think, emotional intelligence in general, your self-awareness, but also the social awareness and paying attention to that. Nobody wants to be shitted on.
Ooh.
Yeah. Don't shoulda on me.
Shoulda.
Wow.
Don't want that.
That's funny. Did you hear that somewhere?
Yeah, I heard it somewhere a long
time
ago.
See, both of you, I have two quotes in a row, one by Keith and one by Gina, that they heard somewhere, but we're going to call them yours.
They
have probably, you know, passed through the statute of limitations at this point, so might as well be yours.
Don't shoulda on me or anybody else.
Yeah.
I ran into an issue recently, like in the last 24 hours, where someone on my team, these are these leadership moments where you're like, I shouldn't have even responded, where I got a text message at midnight and I should have been in bed because I'm trying to go to bed at 10 p.m. now. And it was hey, could you do me a favor? Could you nominate someone for the awesomeness contest that we're running so that the performers feel that you're relatable? And I said, no. I'm like, I don't need to be relatable to the performers in that way. It's a contest of peers recognizing peers on their awesomeness. And I tried to explain myself in text, which I should not have done at midnight. I'm like, it's not my place to do that when I'm not in the trenches to actually see the awesomeness. The peers need to do that. And coming from me, my concern is now it's favoritism, especially with, you know, performers are sensitive and emotional. It's like, why did Gina pick him over me? And I was just trying to explain that. And his response was, whatever. If you want me to leave, if you want me to leave the company, I'll leave. I was like, whoa.
That escalated fast.
I think there were other reasons why that escalated. I mean, it was late at night. Let's just leave it at that. But it was a moment where, you know, I often, because I'm in this yes and world of acceptance of ideas, and I'm held, and that's one of our core values and behaviors, I have really got locked into a corner where I feel like if I don't accept or say yes to their ideas, then that becomes an issue. Like I'm a hypocrite. But now I've really had to step back and be like, guess what? I can't support every idea you guys have. I can support 95% of them, but I don't think it's healthy for me to be the one choosing the winner of awesomeness. I don't know. What do you think, Keith?
Well, you don't have to agree with every idea, but I think if you consider each idea, that's really.
And I do.
Not every idea is a great idea. This idea is not a great idea, and it's not unique to performers. It's if you were to jump in and participate, you would show favoritism and people would get in. And it's, I agree with you. You should not be engaged in that. And, you know, it's like, oh, that's a really interesting idea. Let me think about it for a little bit. No, but considering it and rejecting it is fine.
And I already had, this is what's interesting, and I don't mind that my team runs this way. This was a really awesome kind of recognition contest that this person came up with. And it was his idea to do this and have like a cash prize attached to it every month, nothing big. And he implemented it without running it by me. And as soon as he like sent out a communication about it, then he emailed me and said, hey, I thought I would apologize later for this idea. And another person, like one of my integrators was on that email. And he's like, I'll take the money out of my pocket. It's like $25 price. I'll take the money out of my pocket to pay for it. And the other person says, oh, I've done ideas like that before and said I'd pay for it. And Gina always ends up paying for it. And I said, I think it's an awesome idea. I'm like, great job. Awesome initiative. Run with it. And I was really in such a moment of like, this is amazing. It was a great idea. He ran with it. He apologized after the fact. Like he didn't get my approval. I don't want them to feel like they have to get my approval on everything. They need to be able to do things without my approval. But then he came back with this, can you nominate someone? That's when I'm like, all right, the contest, this is a great idea, but I cannot be choosing.
Well, and there's not actually, if you're choosing awesomeness, then that's actually not, that's subjective and it's in a matter of opinion. So I just went to a holiday party for US Mortgage and they gave out awards for awesomeness, but the awesomeness was quantitative. It was volume numbers. So the most awesome person was the one with the most volume in terms of sales. So then that's easy to measure, but how do you measure someone, you as the leader, as the CEO of that company and the owner, say, well, you're more awesome than you. Like, how do you measure that? And that I would definitely stay out of it and tell everybody why. Like, it's, you think they're all awesome because yeah, they're part of your company.
Right. Right. And again, because I'm not in the trenches, I would probably do a shitty thing and, you know, nominate the one person I saw them do something because that's the only person I saw awesomeness out of. And I didn't see the six other people that did awesome things just for the sake of, you know, this came from Gina.
Or you saw something awesome that you thought was so awesome about this person, but meanwhile, the rest of the entire group and team sees a lot of unawesome stuff behind the scenes that you're not seeing because you're not in the trenches. Like, somebody can look bright and shiny to the leader, but not be bright and shiny to the other members of the team sometimes. That happens plenty.
Oh, yeah. Keith has like a thought. I see it on
his face. Oh, I agree. No, I'm just like, that's so common when a leader recognizes somebody, and it's just because that person knows how to get noticed. And
yes.
And the other folks are maybe doing more.
Oh my gosh, here's a great example. So this is a really vivid image from my childhood when I was in art school, and we were having a meeting because we were getting ready to do a performance, and the director of the school stood up this one girl and told all of us that we should be more like this girl because she was really doing awesome and taking care of herself so well, and we should all follow her example. Meanwhile, she was my roommate at the time, and all of us knew that this girl had a terrible, terrible eating disorder like I've never seen since. And so we're all sitting there watching the leader say, y'all should all be like this awesome person. And we're all sitting there knowing what really is going on at ground level. And it's just, yeah, it was so crazy.
That's a really good example of, and it happens. You're going to be out of touch. You're not going to know exactly what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, if you're intuitive enough as a leader, you can get a sense of it. Like I can sense people that I know they're bullshitters, and I know they're trying to like, ooh, look what I'm doing, Gina. And I know what they're
doing. People will sometimes be very good at hiding the ugly side, though. Like in that instance I just described. Like,
yeah,
that was a really, yeah, really ugly side that she did a great job of hiding, of course, because most people with an eating disorder do. But she hid it so well that he had no idea. And that's what happens sometimes when people put on that bright, shiny face for the leader of like to be the favorite puppet. But...
because you're more concerned about showing how great you are to the person of authority, yep, which Keith is, you know, not good with authority. Keith's like, screw that. I'm not going to be a shiny penny in front of authority.
You know, a way that you could even go back to that awesomeness contest idea is to ask that question, like, how are you guys deciding who is awesome? Is it their consistent attendance to classes? Is it their going above and beyond to support the other players? Is it going above and beyond somehow, or is it just their how sparkly they are on stage? Because I know in improv there's so much more to the whole game than just the performance.
Yeah, it's not just about the performance. It is really about the, because it is a collaborative, right? Like our entire, the way we run is that it is a step-by-step process. You don't just become a performer because you want to be. You don't get to just audition to be on stage. Your audition begins from the first time you take a class with us, because we're watching everything you do. Did you show up to class on time? Did you work well with people on stage? Were you coachable? Did you take feedback well? And then when you come on to work at the bar and selling tickets, did you show up on time? Did you pay attention? Did you do what it takes? Their audition starts from the first day they take improv level one, because they have to work together as a team, and the team has to take care of each other. And that's how I think where I fail, where I'm constantly trying to improve is, yeah, go ahead, run with that idea. And then I don't do enough coaching per se on, okay, that's a great idea. And I don't look through the, because I'm not a detail person. Keith knows. I'll be like, great, good, you run with it. And I really need to get back in there and be like, okay, so here's some things you need to consider in the operations of it, how it's presented, that people understand it, how is this contest being run? And I don't do that well. I don't know what the answer is. Get somebody else to do that for me, maybe.
Awareness, that's all.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. And then I fly off to the next thing I'm working on.
I know nothing about that.
But I'm putting lots of systems in place right now. I just need a couple more weeks to have everything in place because I cannot continue to operate like this. Keith is so subdued today.
I'm just here to add where I can.
Well, you did say your big learning last year was slowing down and the value of slowing down. So maybe that's what you're doing with us, slowing down.
Yeah, it's you know, that's a really good point. One of the things I've had to teach myself over the last few years, part of that slowing down is to shut up and listen. And instead of just being the, you know, you mentioned in these Vistage groups, just, oh, here, I have the answer. But just sitting back and listening.
It's so hard.
I would have never guessed that about you, Keith.
Oh, really?
No, I'm serious.
It's a learned behavior.
Okay. Yeah, it actually surprises me. Thank you for your vulnerability.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's so hard to do for me because, and as sometimes I, like, example from what we're just talking about, being with these younger girls and the show situation recently, I would sometimes like pull up to the theater and go, okay, I'm just going to listen, be quiet, not try to tell them solutions to their issues. And it's so hard to do, especially when it's like, oh God, that sounds, you're in a disaster. What a disaster. Please, you know, listen to me. This, I have such a better way, but you know what? My life is not all that perfect. So I don't know if anybody should ever listen, but it's just such a hard, it's a hard skill. And that the ability to just be quiet. God.
Well, I think there is, for some of us, when we want to like throw advice out there because we've been there, think we've been there, we're coming from a good place. We're coming from good intention. We want to be a resource to someone. And really what that person wants is you to just listen to them. They just want to vent it, talk about it, because eventually they're going to process it on their own. And I think that's where I do struggle with that, you know. There've been a couple times, and you know this, that you've come to me like personally, Rachel, on some stuff in my personal life where I'm like, I just want you to listen to me. That's all I want right now. And because that's how my dad was with me. He's like, he'd rather me, I mean, kind of the way he ran as a parent was like, you know, burn your hand on the stove and then you're going to figure out, don't put your hand on the stove. Mm-hmm. So that's how I was conditioned. Not necessarily the best, but I've been conditioned to try things, get burned, learn, hopefully not do it again, and then cry about it.
So Einstein, I love this quote. Einstein had this quote. It says, if, and it's kind of mathematical since it's Einstein, so bear with me. if A equals success in life, then A equals X plus Y plus Z. X is work. Y is play, and Z is keeping your mouth shut.
Okay, that's a lot to process. I'm just gonna go with Z.
Just stay with Z. The rest happens.
It's so hard. You know, I read an article a few years ago about parenting teenagers, and it has stuck with me, and I do actually apply it to my child a little better than I do to grown children, that is, we'll call them adults, children trying to adult. And the article was about, it said, when a child reaches age 13, they know everything that you expect from them. They know all your beliefs. They understand what you want and what you don't want out of them. And then your job from then on out is to listen. Mm-hmm. And I think I've started doing that now when Roxy will reveal certain things that come up, that I just say, so tell me more about that. And how do you feel about that? And you know, then if she asks me how she should handle it, then I'll tell her. But it's like a listening thing of like, they already know. And the more we, and most parents I know, sometimes mine would, they tell you, you shouldn't be doing that or don't do that or whatever. But then most of the time, if you tell a kid, don't do that.
I'm right there with you.
That's what they go do.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's that whole concept of holding space for them, but not taking their space, just holding the space for them. You know, it's so powerful in a relationship, and it's real powerful in business as well. You know, I look at, I work with a number of companies, large and small, and there is a really common problem. It's called the founder CEO problem. And it's where the founder CEO kind of takes them to a certain point, and then it gets to where they can't go any further. And the typical thing that happens in those companies is the founder CEO doesn't listen. They tell what to do. And so it never gets past their ideas. And you walk into a meeting and the founder CEO walks into a meeting and everybody's like, just, okay, tell us what to do. As opposed to, and when that founder CEO can learn to sit back and just listen, there's more wisdom typically in the room, in the crowd, but it's just not being tapped.
Isn't that what happened to Steve Jobs?
How such?
When he was ousted.
Oh, from initially? Yeah.
Yeah.
It may have been. He was always very mercurial and driving force behind it all. Yeah.
I mean, they eventually brought him back, but mm-hmm. I think maybe he was, I can't remember. I saw the movie.
Yeah.
I think he hit a wall as well. Right? You can be the visionary and have the great idea, but there's a point where, okay, now what do I do with this? I can't take this business any further. And I know some other people in business like that. They had the idea. They got it off the ground. There's one in particular that comes to mind. And then they're stuck because they don't have the tools in their toolbox anymore to take it to the next level. And one of those tools is listening. Again, being human.
And stillness and waiting.
Stillness.
I tell you what, I haven't been in the routine of morning meditation for a while. And this morning, and you know, as we've read in Game Changers and discussed many times, that meditation is one of those things that every uber successful person will tell you is important to them. And so this morning I got up and full disclosure, I went to see Dr. Turek yesterday. So you're not really supposed to exercise for 24 hours after you have a treatment.
I forget about that.
So I was like, well, I guess I'll meditate this morning instead of exercise, which was a good choice. So I meditated and golly, it's one of those things that if, when you stop doing it and you get back to it, it's like,
Yeah, I'm still trying to have that magical morning of getting all those things done. And now I'm just like, you know what? Right now I'm just proud of myself that I make it to the gym at 7 a.m. I'm like, yay me.
Well, I think you can't stack too many things at once when you're trying to recalibrate. That's one big thing when people do the New Year's resolution thing every year and they try to recalibrate and they're like, okay, that's it. I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week and I'm going to be on a complete diet and I'm going to stop saying fuck and I'm going to take my wife out more or whatever, you know, and you try to do all those things, then you're setting yourself up for failure, which is why you should only really try to do one thing. Like you just said, be proud of yourself that you're getting yourself up and getting to the gym. The end. Then once that becomes a habit that is unshakable and just so normal, then you might get up a little earlier and meditate. And that's how people stack, kind of like the Zig Ziglar's story about the, you know, block in a mailbox. Like, go to the block and then add the mailbox. Don't try to do it all at one time. And good Lord, I've been guilty of that, which is why my mantra this year is do less with more intention.
Yeah, I was in a good habit of, I mean, this is only a few days have gone by. I was in a good habit of, I get up, I journal, I meditate, I pray. Well, that kind of went to the wayside right now because just getting up and getting to the gym has been, well, and because the dog, you know, second I get up, the dogs want to go out and then that's a process. And I'm like, all right, let me just make it out the door and then come back. Maybe I'll add the next layer tomorrow. Although I started praying at night instead.
Yeah, that was just what came to mind. Maybe you could add that in at night.
Yeah. I talk to God at night when I lay down, like when I was a child, you know, like say your prayers before bed. So I'm like, okay, I'll try that. What, Keith? Just so you know, Doug's going to be using some of these videos sometimes. So you never know. He might get you back in your chair like that you just did.
I can just hear you praying.
Oh, Lord, oh, Lord, oh, Lord, oh, Lord, God, Lord,
oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
I say that prayer with someone, together with someone, not alone.
It's always best to pray in twos.
Or threes, why not?
Oh, well, if you want to, that's a good idea. Let's expand the horizons.
Group prayer, group community prayer. All right, well, on that note, I think it's time for us to wrap up this rogue episode that I forgot what it was about.
What was that about?
It was kind of sedate. It was kind of a sedate episode.
We all feel like, I think we're all like laid back today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do that because being all jacked up and spiraling out of control has not been working for me. Not to say that next time you hear from us, we'll probably be spiraling out of control.
Keith is, you know, he expects that. You never know what's going to happen with the two of us. What, two of us crazy women.
So would you consider the two of you girlfriends?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it was something we'll talk about sometime, right? How to pick those girlfriends.
That was a random question.
No. So we talked about talking about how you pick your girlfriends.
We could talk about that on the next recording.
That would be a good subject, right? Because it changes as you get older.
Yes.
Big time.
Next up. Next rogue episode.
And some girls love a big group of girls. And like, I remember being at dinner with Felix early on when we were dating, and there was this huge group of like 20 girls doing some kind of girls' night out. And that just makes my skin crawl, being like in a group that big. I just don't like it. Too many.
You know, in hindsight, after going out with JJ and Tina and Jennifer, I don't think we could have added one more, because four of us was a lot to handle. I felt bad for the staff at the restaurant. Especially because we kept moving tables. We're like, no, it's too hot over here. No, can we sit over here? No, we want a view. And it just followed us everywhere. And I waited tables, and I was a hostess for many years. And that hostess did exactly what I would do. She's like, I'll just wait for you guys to choose the table you want. It's okay. I was like, and inside I knew.
Well,
she's
played.
Like, yeah, inside I knew. She's like, these damn bitches, just pick a fucking table.
Who do they think they are?
All right, so we'll talk about, and so Keith, can we add to that how to pick your boyfriends too?
Oh, I was gonna add how I pick my girlfriends.
I would say how to pick your guy friends rather than your boyfriends, because that's a whole nother subject. How to pick your boyfriends.
I just want to hear Keith say how he picks his boyfriends.
We could just broaden it, right, and make it more gender neutral and call it how to pick your circle.
I think that's a great idea, especially in today's environment.
Him, her, she.
Them.
She, her, him, his. Yeah.
I think you just drew across your forehead with something.
Oh, I did.
Oh, that's great.
Is it Sharpie? I hope it's Sharpie. Come on.
Yeah. No,
it came off.
Lipstick.
It came off.
No. It's this really cool pen that Casey gave me. JJ gave me for my birthday.
God, wow. I love a good pen.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. This is a good pen, and it writes.
You know,
on
it writes
pen.
On skin really well.
That just gave me some ideas.
Yeah.
Insert here.
I think it's time for us to go. So. We should go. So Warners, we hope you got something out of this sedate episode. Any parting words from Rachel or Keith? Any key learnings from this moment together?
It's okay to go slow. Highly recommend it. Let me know how it goes, because I guarantee it won't. I won't go slow for long as much as I wish to.
Yeah, you'll be back and running in 20 minutes. Keith?
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting how all three of us were kind of on that same path. And that actually begs a question, if you don't mind. Mm. You were, Gina, you were with JJ for your birthday, and and she was doing an exercise about what's your word for 2020?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's like, what's your 2020 word? So what was your 2020 word? What is your 2020 world?
My 2020 word is butterfly.
Wow. Okay, that's random.
You don't get the meaning? You don't get the
and
meaning
Rachel,
of butterfly?
Do you have a 2020 word?
I do. My 2020 word is actually forgiveness.
Oh, that's a great
because...
Oh, wow. Thanks, Keith. Yours, go on, Rachel. Yours is great.
Well, I've noticed about myself that sometimes I get really wound up and lose my temper because it really goes back to some deep-seated resentments that I haven't fully forgiven, and things that I might tell the story and act like I am the bigger person that I forgave a situation, when really deep down in my soul, I haven't really forgiven. So actually at night when I go to sleep right now, because I used to use the mantra of surrender, that was my only word, and now I say forgiveness, acceptance, surrender. Those are my words. Those, you know, the other ones, but forgiveness is the big one, because I'd really like to move through some of that and let it go, because I think I'll be happier person at the seat of my soul when I do.
Well, that brings back to you both read Radical Forgiveness, right?
He's the one that told us to.
Yes.
Yeah. So I read it after you read it, Rachel. So that's such a good book that, you know, it's worth reading again.
I probably should go back to it again, because the first time, you know, the concepts were a lot to absorb. And now that I have that new self-awareness, and it actually came about, there's a guy that I've been following on Facebook for a long, long time, Gina, since I was with you, and he was a fitness coach, and I followed him as a fitness coach, and he's actually evolved, and now he's doing more spiritual type coaching. And he and I got to a conversation because he said he went on to his Facebook page and unblocked everybody that he had blocked on Facebook. And talked about how liberating it was. And then he and I got in this conversation about these past resentments and how you have this story that you've been telling yourself about the other person. And it's just very, very interesting.
Mm, I like that. That's some food for thought for me. Keith, what's your word?
Amazing.
That's nice.
Yes,
maybe
it is.
amazing butterfly is what we should put them together. An amazing butterfly.
Oh, Lordy.
I felt very judged by my word choice, Keith. My feelings were very.
No, I think that if someone who knows you and knows all the things that you're living right now and have been living transitioning from the last year to this year, then butterfly makes sense to me, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just coming out of my cocoon. And
it matches your tattoo.
It does match my tattoo. My butterfly tattoo from last year, coming into this year. The butterfly flew in.
So it really, wouldn't it be one. More like... like cocoon, if you're transitioning, are you the butterfly yet, or is the butterfly where you're headed?
I am the butterfly, but the butterfly is flying around.
Ooh, so you've been through metamorphosis.
Yeah, and I'm a young butterfly.
Okay.
So it's not like I'm an old butterfly. I mean.
So.
Okay, so there's
how do butterflies have sex? Are we going to do that one too? Is there anything like the bee porn that we did?
I need to do some research.
I'm going to research butterfly sex. Part of my butterfly choice is that for anyone who follows numerology, which I do.
Oh, here we go.
God don't strike me down because it's against religion. You laugh. I got JJ into it. Now she's into it too. It's very like on point. So anyway, I am entering a year one, personal year one. There's 9 years. I'm in a beginning year. So this is a year of all new beginnings. Last year was a year of endings. It was year 9. Lots of things ended in year 9. So it made sense for the butterfly in year one to kind of like hook up.
Mm-hmm. Is that just for you or for everybody?
No, that's just for me. Everybody's got a different personal year that they're in right now.
Okay.
Are there only 10 years for everybody?
No, 9.
9 years for everybody?
9 years. It's a 9-year cycle. So year one is all new beginnings. Year 9 is endings. You don't want to start... one of the reasons why we launched the podcast in January,
last year
was because we weren't supposed to begin it this year. Or no, I don't remember now. Now I'm all confused. No. I take it back. We started it. We started the concept and getting it off the ground in year 8, in my year 8.
Right.
Because this was year 9 for me personally. So it was important that behind the scenes, you guys didn't know that. I'm like, this idea has to come to fruition before year 9 begins. I could not start any new projects in 2019.
Okay. You certainly ended a few. So.
I ended quite a few projects in 2019. There are people that live by this. Like, I have a friend who, when she was trying to get pregnant, she was advised not to have a baby in her year 9. She had to wait till year 1. There you go. That's a whole nother topic.
There is a whole nother topic. Alternate.
Yeah.
Alternate.
Wow, we just went into tangents as we tried to end this show. So I think we're really going to... end the show now. So thanks for listening, Warners, to our rogue ramble. I'm Gina, and you can find me on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
I'm Rachel Pitts, and you can find me. I have rebranded, formerly Rachel on Real Estate, and now rebranded to The Singing Lender, since now I'm in mortgage. And I sing.
I just snorted. No, I snorted.
I love it. The Singing Lender. Oh, that's great.
Well, you know, there's a singing, mm-hmm. there's a singing realtor, and I've been doing all this marketing with the videos. And people just love them. They think they're crazy, ridiculous. And one of my friends, what really struck me was, if I can take a subject as boring as mortgage and make it fun, then I'm onto something. And that's what the CEO and the president of the company told me this weekend at our party, too. They're like, you're onto something there. So I'm rebranding, and we could talk about rebranding another episode since we didn't really get to that. But you can find me as The Singing Lender on Facebook and Instagram. And Singing Lender SC on Twitter, and you can find all of our
Keith, information. Keith, you want to say anything about yourself?
WomenYourMotherWarnedYouAbout.com.
You can find my information on LinkedIn through the WomenYourMotherWarnedYouAbout.com links. And see what you can see.
He is
That's my
amazing.
Extent of
see
social
how amazing
media.
He is
amazing, because that is his word for the year.
Thank you. It's true.
Season 2 of Women Your Mother Warns You About. So, yeah. So we're going to go. I'm going to go. You guys are going to go.
Okay. So, bye, ladies.
Bye.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah. It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.